Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our good news segment. I have Dr. James Thomas joining me here today. And, you know, before I introduce him and talk a little bit about his role, director for the Center for Heart, Valve Disease and Academic Affairs and the Bloom Cardiovascular Institute of Northwestern Medicine again is joining us here. Before we get into it, you all have heard me share stories. My dad passed away heart disease. My stepmom, literally, her heart exploded. And so when we talk, my uncle, my favorite uncle at a very young age, the same thing. So when we talk about the heart and heart valve disease, it gets my attention. But what gets my attention more is what Dr. James Thomas is talking about, this cardiologist at Northwestern Medicine, and focusing on AI, artificial intelligence, machine learning. This is the new world of medicine science. Dr. Thomas, I'm going to call you Dr. James. Dr. Thomas, look, thank you so much for joining me here today. I often think about what if my folks were around when you were making these discoveries? What would the game-changing world look like? What would be the answer to that question, perhaps?
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Pat, and it's my pleasure to join you and your listeners here. And, you know, the whole key to preventing tragedies like you described for your father and stepmother is early detection of disease or preventive detection, detection of a tendency toward a disease. You know, there are AI algorithms that can look in your eye at your retina. And, you know, doctors are trained to a certain extent to recognize diabetes and high blood pressure, but the computer is so much more, can take in so much more information, and it can warn you that maybe there's diabetes down the road 5 years. Mm-hmm. You can see the early changes, you can intervene early, and you can prevent the ravages of these chronic diseases.
You know, I'm thinking about these collaborative ventures, if for lack of a better word, excuse my ignorance on this, but these partnership ventures, they're so important. They're so really exciting for people. And I want to talk a little bit about the discoveries. And the reason that I am is I just went through two knee replacements and I was astonished at watching what the robotics was did. I mean, it was just, I mean, it was so sci-fi for me that I forgot that I'm living in the century I'm living in. I want to ask you, what is the future as you look at this for things like robotics, but what it means to save lives with this technology, because that's really what we're talking about now, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Good.
Well, I think, you know, it's helpful to look back a little bit and see how we've gotten here. And you know, concepts of artificial intelligence have been around 60, 70 years. They were talking about this in the 50s, and a lot of the same computer algorithms were being proposed, neural networks and computer learning. But the computers were so primitive. It really is only in the last 10 years that we've got enough computer power that we can actually make these algorithms work. And we've got enough annotated examples. That just means a ton of pictures of pathology or echocardiograms or a whole slew of these things that you can train these algorithms on. So for instance, we've been doing a partnership with a company on the West Coast that is trying to bring the stethoscope into the 21st century. You know, the stethoscope really hasn't changed in 200 years. It's a bell on the chest and two tubes into the ears.
Yeah.
But now we have a stethoscope that, first of all, amplifies the sound so you can hear it better. But you can also send those sound waves up to the cloud, where an AI algorithm that has been trained on thousands and thousands of examples of heart sounds will tell you if there's a murmur and what it's likely to be. And we've now shown in a recent publication that we can detect severe aortic stenosis in about 93% of cases there. So the idea is you democratize medicine. You take the expertise that may really only exist in a few major centers and send it out to rural areas, to underserved inner city areas, to the developing world, and you're able to detect disease, hopefully in time to do something about it or before some tragedy occurs.
I mean, this is really, let's just talk about how we have brought the future to the present. Because Dr. Thomas, when I hear you talking about this, I mean, it is so exciting to be thinking about how we look at the past and historically what a patient may go through, understand the underpinnings of where the areas for, let me just call it, areas for advancement may be in the science and the medicine, and then bringing that back full circle to really looking at the new technology that could come in combined with your knowledge, your experience, assessing the past to create a future for people to have optimal health. I mean, this really is an exciting, how should I call it, avenue of medicine, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And the idea is empowering people to do more with their health. We are, one of my colleagues is working with the Apple Watch to monitor patients who may have a history of atrial fibrillation. And he can detect if they go into atrial fibrillation and immediately start a blood thinner that may prevent a stroke. And then if there's no more atrial fibrillation over a month or some other period of time, then it's safe to stop the blood thinner. And it just keeps monitoring along. But you catch it as soon as it happens there.
Let me just ask you this question. One is, how do people find out more? And then I want to get to the question of how can patients and their doctors come together, one, to ask the right questions, and then to benefit from it?
Well, first, to your question of where you can learn more, we have a website for our overall AI and medicine institute there. And so if you just put, we actually call it augmented intelligence. We don't call it artificial intelligence because the emphasis is not we're replacing anything. We are developing helpers to work with us. And so if you just put augmented intelligence in medicine at Northwestern into a Google search, you will come, it'll take you straight to our website there. And I think, you make a real point. Now we do real basic AI research, and we have students, young cardiologists that are training in the trenches with our computer engineers and learning the real basics of how to do machine learning. But if it only stays in academia and gets published in journals and doesn't get out to the patients,
all right,
then it's, where's really the value
right.
in that?
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. Bringing these ideas to the forefront and creating dialogue. I almost wish, this is my wish, when I went through this knee surgery, I loved researching this. And what I started to do is go online and to look for other people that had similar experiences. And there was just a handful that were wanting to talk about this and change the landscape of what's available for people. I would love to see a forum created so that we can bring both patients and doctors and communities involved in this, because we now live in a world of AI technology, and we now know what it's like to be able to use the internet and things like Zoom. Because what you're talking about is so seriously important that without making the connection you just pointed out, it may take us a long time to really educate people about what they can do to save their lives. And that's the accelerated plan that I see in you doing these interviews.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Well, we have one of our cardiologists has developed an algorithm that looks at all of our patient records every day to detect patients who may have undiagnosed heart failure. And we've got another company we've worked with has developed an echocardiograph that uses AI to guide novices to get diagnostic images so that we can really, take it to areas where there isn't ultrasound available, and we can make diagnoses straight off from that.
Wow. I want to thank you for today. I know your time is limited and short, but the message is powerful and visionary. Dr. Thomas, again, how can people find out more about this? And I'd love to know your personal message for today.
Yeah, the point your Google machine towards augmented intelligence in medicine at Northwestern. And you'll go straight to the overall website. It will link to a lot of these other efforts. And my overall message is, do not fear artificial intelligence. The robots are not taking over. These are going to be assistants to us.
Oh,
yeah. To make your doctors better.
Yeah, that's exactly what my message was when I talked on air about my surgeries. It didn't replace my doctor. My doctor was navigating. And the trust begins there. Thank you so much for today, Doctor.
All right. Thanks so much, Dr.
All right.
Pat. And good luck to you.
And everybody out there, let's take a short break. Again, more information about how we can become empowered in mind, body, and spirit. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome to our good news segment. I got to tell you, this is good news. What we're about to talk about today, I believe, is one of the foundational, pivotal points in what we think about learning. Why am I going to say that? I come from and worked for Bell Labs for 25 years. I know how young and naive and ignorant in a lot of ways about science, technology, engineering, and math. But I will tell you, my motivation for getting a PhD had very little to do with the PhD. And had a lot to do with spending a lot of time with people in Bell Labs and engineering. Arno Penzias, bagels with the Arno. Why are we talking about this today? Jody Grant, Executive Director, After School Alliance. Laura Overdeck, Chair, Overdeck Family Foundation, and Founder and President, Bedtime Math. STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. There was something about these people that motivated me, barely graduated in high school, to say, I need to learn more. There's something to what these people are doing. But how do we get our children engaged? Jody, Laura, welcome. It's great to have you both.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Thank you.
So not everybody's going to get my Bell Labs experience. I happen to be starting at the lowest level in Bell Labs in the mailroom. And guess what I got? I got building 15. So that had to give me top clearance. And they sent me, a 17-year-old that was a crazy child, to deliver mail to some of the most brilliant people on the planet. But boy, did this stuck with me. It stuck with me forever. Can you talk about the importance first? I want to come out of the gate with this. Where we are today, where the gap is, and why we really need to not just mention STEM, not just mention science, technology, engineering, and math, but clearly embed this. Jody, do you want to go first and then Laura, and then we'll mix it up?
Great. So I love how you frame that, because what our study was looking at as we went and we interviewed parents, and we were looking at the opportunities for our kids to be exposed to STEM learning in the after-school space. And this is so important because that's the kind of learning that brings science and math and engineering and technology alive, where it's hands-on, where it's engaged, where you have a chance to work with mentors and see occupations like you did that you might not have even known existed, just sitting in a classroom. And so we want all of our kids to have these opportunities because we know that's where the spark is really lit. And what we're finding is that there has been a growth in STEM offerings and after-school programs, which we're very excited about. So for kids that are lucky enough to go to after-school programs, there are more opportunities to actually do this engaged STEM learning. But what we also found is that for far too many kids, the opportunities don't exist. So on any given day, there are 25 million kids whose parents want them to be in after-school programs, but they either can't afford them or they don't exist in their community. So we have got to be doing more for the sake of our kids and for the sake of our own economic future.
There's something about your life that said to you, wait a minute, here I am. I am BA in astrophysics from Princeton, an MBA from Wharton School of Business, honorary DE, right? Doctorate in engineering from Stevens. Mm-hmm. Something got you fired up to say, wait, I got to do something. I better create this foundation. What was that?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's the contrast between what I had as a kid, where I really fell in love with math and science, and what I've seen as an adult in our culture, which just frankly hates math. I mean, I was lucky as a kid to grow up in a household where I had no flashcards. My parents were all about just weaving math into things. We were a very maker household. We didn't know that term back then, but my mom cooked with me, you know, so I'd be using teaspoons, tablespoons, fractions. My dad did a lot of carpentry as a hobby. I got to use unsafe power tools at a really young age. You know, you got to know your 16th of an inch. What I see as an adult is that a lot of America is nervous about math. You know, adults are afraid to calculate the tip. We've been swamped with numbers, and people are just flabbergasted. They just don't even know what to do because it's all fractions and percents, the same stuff that you use to calculate the tip. And I think it's caught everybody flat-footed. How do you question the news? How do you know that things make sense? Basic, you know, just the population at large needs to understand numbers and science. And then at a second level, of course, we need high flyers like you getting a PhD to go on and invent the vaccine that's going to save us, right? We always need our next generation of innovators. We need those people too. So I'm hoping that with the pandemic, it's really raised awareness around that.
Oh my gosh, I think it's raised awareness about so many things. We can do a whole nother hour show on that. See, this is the conversation I want to go to now. I went to your website and I love what you're doing. First of all, I love infographics. AfterSchoolAlliance.org. Everybody got that? AfterSchoolAlliance.org. But I want to ask you this question, each of you. What can we do to close the gap? Because first of all, I was impressed that some of your numbers went up. Like what? Right? Mm-hmm. But where's the gap? And I know you both are here to fill it. Tell me, if you don't mind, what each of you sees as your vision for this and what you are so excited about getting done. And, you know, I'm going to go backwards now. Let's kick it up with Laura and then we'll go to Jody. How's that sound?
Sure.
Perfect.
Well, just to set the stage with some numbers, I think we forget that in a given year, kids are awake for about 5,500 hours. They spend 1,100 in school. That's it. Even in normal times, kids are awake and not in school much more time than they're in school. And all that time is an opportunity to keep learning. And the fact is, wealthier kids, kids with resources, not only tend to be in better schools because of these inequities, but they also have the resources to have better after school. They keep learning. They do math club. They do robotics clubs. If you're a kid who doesn't have those resources, you're probably in a weaker school district and not getting access to good after school. So you're falling ahead, you're falling behind twice. And that is the gap we have to fill. We've got to get that access to kids because, as Jody was saying earlier, after school is a chance to ignite their love of learning. It gets the flywheel going. And then when parents see that, the parents and kids together can push their school to follow suit and really make sure that the learning continues.
I want to ask you for this. Not only how do we find out more information, but how can we, what's the word I'm looking for? Fire this up. What are each of you looking to do to just get fired up? I know these interviews are part one, but I pretty much think you both got something going on.
So I thank you for the platform because, first of all, I wanted to go back and say that while we are seeing an increase in the opportunities for kids to learn STEM in after school, the problem is we are seeing a decrease in the opportunities for kids to attend after school.
Yep.
So we have this huge problem, and it's particularly true for our low-income families who can't afford these programs on their own, and it is particularly true for our kids of color and our immigrant families, and it's not just an urban issue, it's also very much a rural issue that we need more programs to be serving our kids. And my vision is that we stop thinking about schools as the only place where our kids can learn. I think that schools are extremely important, but as we all know, and as Laura has said, kids are learning all the time. And there are so many opportunities to learn outside the classroom, as you talk about, you know, your experience at Bell Labs, where we want to be thinking about a community learning ecosystem, where we're tapping into our businesses and having internships and apprenticeships, and we're tapping into virtual learning opportunities, and we're tapping into outdoor eds and community-based organizations and community colleges and faith-based organizations and science and tech programs to really maximize the types of places and the types of teachers and mentors our kids are exposed to. And the last piece I was going to add is this is possible. I'm not dreaming. There is right now the federal law that is bringing COVID dollars relief to educators can be used to create these programs and expand these programs.
Yeah.
So it explicitly says in the law, you can use it to partner with community-based organizations to create after-school programs and expand after-school programs. We need to convince our school districts to do that. We need to convince them on the ground to take this big amount of money that they're getting and not just keep it within the walls of the school, to recognize that we have to expand our learning.
What I really hope for is that we get some funding so that, you know, folks like you can get out. And honestly, I don't like to say this, but it's old school, go door to door and say, did you know in your area, your district, you can do this? And what kind of help you need? Because this is our future. Jody, Laura, I would love to know from each of you what your personal message is. What do you want to leave us with? And certainly, what can we do? How to find out more? And thank you for putting infographics on your website.
Well, I can jump in with one thought to share, which is that the ability and the need to fall in love with math and science and propagate all this spans all ages. It's the adults as well as the kids. You know, I know with my bedtime math app out of my nonprofit, it serves up a funny story every night with math questions. We have adults write to us and say, you know what, this is the first time I'm enjoying math. I'm doing it with my kid. That is important because the adults signal to the kids that math and science and engineering are cool. And that's the conversation we have to get going. And we see that you can get it going at any age. Someone can still fall in love with these subjects and then pass that on, a good kind of contagion, to the kids. So any adult really can step up and say, you know what? I'm not going to say, oh, I'm just not good at math, or oh, I'm not a science person. We don't have to say that anymore. We're going to move on and really signal, because we need to get this next generation on its feet. They've had immense challenges these last couple of years in particular. And it starts with the adults in tandem with them.
And I would just encourage all your listeners to go to www.afterschoolalliance.org. We have our infographics. We also have all sorts of information to really help you convince your school districts to do more of this. So if you're lucky enough to be in a place that has these programs, let's expand them to reach more kids. And if you're not, we have every bit of resource and data and talking points that you need to help make this happen in your community. So I'm hopeful.
I think it's really paradoxical and ironic that the three of us are women, and we really know that really one of the gaps that we're, I'm laughing myself, right? That one of the gaps that we do need to address are inequities that exist in women and people of color and underrepresented in STEM fields. This, to me, is the greatest opportunity for this country to soar above all others. If we fill this gap, can you imagine where we'd be, ladies?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? All right. I want to thank
you
both.
We'll keep working on it. All right, thank you.
Yeah, but please keep being Energizer Bunnies. Please, can you do that? Can you just keep talking?
Yes.
Get yourself a podcast. I'm not kidding. Thank you so much. Thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on. And we're not fooling around this. You've got to look at this. AfterSchoolAlliance.org. You have children. You have grandchildren. Talk to your school districts. Tell them about the funding. Get in action and close the gap. We'll see you next time.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.